You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey guys, do you like heavy metal? Do you like video games, comic books, movies, theme parks, or even cool TV shows? We've got the place for you. Metal Geeks. Time to rock out with your geek out. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek, Dave, and George. Geek it out, fellas.
Welcome, everyone, to episode number 206 of the Metal Geeks podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry the Metal Geek, along with...
George Tripsis.
And we have our very good friend, the Metal Detector, Justin.
What's going on, guys?
Welcome, sir. And we have a very special guest. It's only been 8 months since you've been on the show. It's been too long, man. We have Matt Harvey. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back again.
Course, man. You can come back anytime you want, man. Anytime you want to geek out, this is the place for you.
I just felt like with the solo album I had come out, I was like, this would be the perfect place to sort of, you know, talk about it, because so many people that are into metal probably would have zero overlap with what I was doing. So
this is the perfect. Thanks for being on, man. Let's jump right into it, man. For people that don't know, you put out you call it a solo album, but it's way more than that, man. It's The Last Son of Krypton. It's a movie score, basically, to a movie that hasn't come out yet that I want to see. So what was the impetus about doing this, and how did this happen?
You know, it was kind of a slow burn that got kicked into high gear, really. For a long time, I just would get little snippets of themes or melodies or ideas, and I would just transcribe them. And then when we did the Exhumed record Death Revenge a few years ago, a good friend of mine, our old bass player, Matt Widener, he helped me kind of realize some of those ideas into kind of like horror film score type pieces. And that was like, oh, yeah, this is really something you can do. Obviously, we didn't have the money to pay an orchestra or anything. But I was like, it's really involved and you got to have your own studio and this and that. And then a couple of years later, we built our own studio. And then the pandemic hit. So obviously, I haven't been on tour in, you know, over a year and a half at this point. And so that was kind of the time to start developing these little ideas that I had, and then actually figuring out how you take it from like a humming a tune to like, you know, making it a whole piece. And over the course of like the last, I guess, 2 years, I think I wrote the album. I finished the album like three times because it was such a giant learning curve.
Yeah.
First learning, you know, what instruments I might want to use and kind of how to fill out the parts, and then learning how to engineer it and mix it and work with the instruments to try to get them to sound, you know, realistic, because it's all virtual instruments, all digital. And then, you know, it's just like every few months I was like, I'd learned so much. I was like, wait, okay, no, I'm not done. Holy shit, I got to go back. And I just, after the third time, I was like, I'm done. I have to stop. Or else, you know, this will never be finished. I gotta abandon this, or I'm gonna drive myself
insane, right?
You know,
how many times did you do the title track?
That was the worst one. The title track, I mean, it went through, I mean, at least like 15 iterations.
Oh yeah,
done. And yeah, it's also the one where there's one section where I was like, shouldn't have done that. But it's something that only probably I will get mad about. It's just, there's like two lines that follow each other too closely. And it just was like, this kind of diminishes the impact. But,
well, you know, we're always our worst critics, you know.
Of course. Yeah.
Well, I want to tell you real quick, the title track on the album is probably my favorite. So,
thanks, man.
Yeah. So it's really good, man. It feels like you're auditioning for like the next John Williams job or something.
I mean, that would be the dream, you know. I'm, you know, trying to, I guess, you know, that's the avenue that I would like to go in. And I think also not going on tour for a year and a half has made me really realize how fucking boring like my day job is. And it doesn't pay that great, but I never really cared because I wasn't there for longer than like, you know, 8 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And now I'm just, you know, and my job is great. I cannot complain. I bring my dog to work every day and they let me go on tour, and I've been there 5 years and I love my boss and I love the owner. However,
if you're listening,
Right. I mean, it's all true, but I'm just getting out of my mind. I was like, fuck, this can't just be my job forever because this sucks. So yeah, it would be great to, you know, to move into doing work for whatever film projects, YouTube videos, whatever, you know, commercial.
I had the same exact thoughts that George did when listening to this, like, man, this is really good stuff. I could see you doing this for video games, film scores. I mean, you were really into that level.
That's
really cool, man.
Good to hear. Yeah. So, I mean,
the question I had, Matt, was like, I want to know what's the plot that you had in mind when you were orchestrating with, obviously it's something how Brainiac and Lex Luthor come together and destroy Metropolis.
I mean, don't you want to see this movie now, George?
I did. I listened to it twice now, so I really liked it a lot.
It's actually kind of, you're on the right track. Basically, it's kind of like an origin story for Superman. You know, it starts whatever, he comes to Earth, grows up. The thought that I had, and obviously it's too complicated to just tell with music, you know, the music is sort of the act one, act two, act three, Superman set up, Lex Luthor set up, then Brainiac shows up, kicks Superman's ass, he goes to the Fortress of Solitude, gets better, comes back, wins, goes on. But the kind of more detailed concept that I had would be like, you know, Superman's rocket crash lands in Smallville, and, you know, obviously LexCorp knows about it. Lex Luthor goes to the site, recovers parts of the craft. Superman has parts of the craft, or, you know, Clark and the Kents have parts. Clark grows up, and Luthor is doing his own research on the alien technology the whole time. Anyway, you know, so he's like 20 years older than Superman at this point. Clark grows up, he goes to Metropolis, blah, blah, blah. He shows up, Luthor realizes, like, oh, this has got to be connected, right? Because this is a world with no other superheroes. And so he activates the technology, which brings Brainiac to Earth, because Brainiac's like, oh, there's still some Kryptonian shit out there. Hold my beer. I got to go fix this. I thought I destroyed that whole planet. And so Brainiac shows up, beats up Superman. Superman goes to the Fortress of Solitude, and when he's there getting healed, there's like a whole song about that. He learns that there's a piece of the ship that he needs to defeat Brainiac, and Lex Luthor has it. And first, obviously, Lex Luthor is set up as the antagonist to Superman, you know, man versus God and all that stuff. But he has to go back to Metropolis and be like, yo, Lex Luthor, like, I need this thing. And Luthor's like, that's cool, but I also have kryptonite. So here's the fucking deal. Like, I want Metropolis to be free of Brainiac. I don't want to destroy the Earth. I will help you, but you're going to help me too. And now that would be like the setup for the next movie. So Luthor provides Superman with the means, the technology to defeat Brainiac. Brainiac leaves. Everyone thinks both Superman and Lex Luthor are a hero. And then the next movie is kind of a more complicated conflict.
That's amazing. Cool. I'm looking at your song titles as you were describing that. I'm like, I can see where every story point hit with a song. That's really cool, man.
Thanks. Yeah. So, I mean, I really like both the characters of Superman and Lex Luthor. I think Lex Luthor is a very relatable character, you know?
I can't help but notice that you don't have a track called Martha. And I'm wondering.
We said it was a good.
I already covered that one.
We said it was a good story, not a bad one.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, and it's weird too because I actually love the Hans Zimmer score for Man of Steel. I think the score is beautiful, and I think it totally fits the tone of the movie. It just does not, to me, when I hear da dum da dum, that doesn't really make me think of like Superman, you know,
right?
Like, dun, 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 dun. What's that?
It's a very somber Superman.
It is, and that's the mood of the whole movie, which I personally was not a fan of that take on Superman. And my thing was last year, just the whole zeitgeist of the year with pandemic and everything else. It was just like everything was sort of so dismal. And I think everybody felt, I certainly felt really isolated. And I was like, I just want something that's like really optimistic and really positive. And that takes me back to being, you know, a little kid and seeing Superman and Superman 2 and kind of tapping into that vein of you know, deeply buried serotonin.
Yeah, man. The Last Son of Krypton has heavy, like, you know, John Williams vibes from Richard Donner Superman in it. Right. So I really dug it, man. It was really good.
That's cool, man. That's you know, John Williams is kind of a
high praise from George. He doesn't like anything.
It's true. I don't like anything.
Yeah, John Williams is kind of like in his own league as far as composers. You know, like I've spent the last couple of years like really studying shit and listening and breaking stuff down and listening to interviews and reading interviews with various people from, you know, Jerry Goldsmith and Hans Zimmer and John Williams and Ennio Morricone and everybody in between. And Williams is he's like his own kind of phenomenon because his style is really different, but yet it's extremely derivative, but yet totally unique. And it's just, you can't really, I don't know. He's kind of like the top of the mountain for a reason. You know, he's the reason, there's a reason why everyone knows him, you know?
Yeah.
Now I've got to ask you about the songwriting for something like this. How different is it from writing like a metal song to composing a song like Man of Steel, you know?
I mean, it's completely different, but I didn't want to, because it was a record with no visual, the songs still kind of have like a repetitious structure that you wouldn't do if you were like, you know, if you were scoring a picture. But the songs themselves are kind of cyclical. However, I kind of made the decision. I didn't want to do it like a straight, like John Williams, like leitmotif where every time a Star Destroyer comes on, you hear dum, 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 dum. Because if you just did that on a record, it would feel super repetitive, you know what
right.
I mean? It would be like, why am I hearing this melody for the millionth time or whatever? So it was kind of a weird balance to strike between structure and something that could be just listened to on its own, but still conveying the story. And so it was a really, I don't know, I had kind of had no roadmap really whatsoever, you know? And obviously the arrangement is a lot more involved because, you know, with a metal band, you got two guitars, bass, drums, then maybe you got a melody guitar, a harmony guitar. Maybe if you're going wild, you have another one.
Like our main.
Yeah.
But let's have three guitars.
Right. I mean, and you know, if ever there was a band that can actually utilize it.
Yeah.
So it's really, really different. I think that's why it was so stimulating, you know?
Speaking of Iron Maiden, the new album's out this weekend.
Oh, it's coming out this weekend?
Yeah.
Did they only release the one track, or was there a second one?
There was a second track. I think the Senjutsu, whatever it's called. I've been on record. I'm not a fan of the album cover. It feels very old. It doesn't feel very modern to me, but that's okay. Maybe that's what they were going for.
I mean,
it's Iron Maiden.
I like you say, George? Cover,
they have been around for a while.
It's right. Not like they're a new band.
the first single really sounded very like dad-ish.
Yeah.
Has Iron Maiden progressed into dad metal now? Is that what it is?
I mean, the
kind of felt like it.
People that age are their target audience now. I mean,
right.
I feel like the younger generation is listening to Asking Alexandria and shit, and like they don't. You know, they don't listen to the classic stuff.
I mean, I kind of feel like anybody that's into metal is sort of expected to know at least, you know, Priest, Sabbath, Maiden, Metallica, Slayer. You know, that's just sort of like,
right.
I feel like they're going to know it. I don't know if they're going to love it, but I mean, obviously, I like Iron Maiden, but they got a whole wall. So
I'm so jealous of that Ace is High and the Woman in Uniform posters you have. So jealous.
You can't really see the Phantom of the Opera one next to it, but my favorite thing about the Phantom of the Opera poster is he's playing like a pipe organ. Eddie's playing a pipe organ with his own face that's like carved into the side of the mountain, but there's an electrical cable like from the organ plugged into the mountain, which... I don't know. It's just there's a lot to unpack.
I got to meet Derek Riggs like in 2019, right before an Iron Maiden show here in Houston. He was at a local pub right nearby and just doing autographs and shit. It was so weird.
Didn't you get a head sign or something?
No, not from him. No. I got an original piece from him. It was so cool.
it's kind of like, it kind of bums me out. I mean, I don't really know the inside baseball on it, but
right.
they've pretty much stopped using his artwork for anything aside from the album covers. And like, they have, you know, they'll still sell like Trooper shirts or whatever, but everything else, like my friend has the pinball machine.
Yeah,
it's all new art of Derek's art, and I was like,
yeah, it is weird. It's like his character design, but other people are now doing the work.
I mean, I'm assuming cut out. It's a royalties thing that
I'm sure
they would have to pay Derek Riggs more money, whereas they can just be like, hey, Joe Schmo, can you copy this Derek Riggs picture?
They probably, I don't know any of the inner workings, but they probably bought the character from him. Hey, create this character, or maybe we'll, you know, and then that's.
I think of a video game with that character.
They did, yes.
Yeah, Ed Hunter. Yeah, that's right.
Well, I don't play video games, so I knew that.
Like, I imagine they would have to pay a pretty good penny to use that character for a game.
I mean, I have to imagine, honestly, that they've owned Eddie from the beginning because they've always had the same manager, Rod Smallwood, who is an incredibly shrewd businessman. And in fact, he used Maiden's publishing to start their own publishing company. And they published, like, I mean, it's been a long time since I've looked into it, but I remember they were publishing like Britney Spears like 15 years ago. So I doubt Derek Riggs owns Eddie at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I highly doubt it too.
You know, which is not necessarily unfair. I mean, if he was created as a work for hire and so on, but I also know that they put Derek Riggs under contract in the 80s and they're like, this is what we're going to pay you. You know, we're going to ask you to create X number of designs in X amount of time. You cannot make artwork for any other rock bands. Like, you can take on other commissions or whatever, but you cannot paint anything for any other bands. And they also did the same thing for Martin Birch, their producer. They're like, mm-hmm. hey, we're going to be making records every 2 years. Here's X millions of dollars to, like, just be our producer. Like, cool.
It doesn't sound like a bad deal to me.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Rod Smallwood is a very, very smart guy. And, you know, without him, there's kind of no Iron Maiden. There would just be like this really, really good new wave of British heavy metal band, and that would be it, you know.
Right, George, so did you have?
I have a couple more questions. So you talked a little bit about the process of making Last Son of Krypton.
Yeah.
I just wanted you to, like, kind of elaborate a little bit more, like, what was it like, and like, what was some of your favorite things, some of the things you hated doing, or if you had to do it, you know, for the 30th time again, what was it like? What is something you would change?
Well, basically, you know, not to give away the store or whatever, but essentially what you're doing, or what the way I did it, is by writing the music first as MIDI, and then assigning different voices to you know, MIDI tracks. So you're literally looking at each note is just a little bar on a thing, and so you have to kind of go in and manually, because I don't, you know, if you're like a keyboardist and you have like a big cool MIDI keyboard, they have like wheels and shit that you can turn mm-hmm. to adjust the volume, but
yeah,
I can't play keyboard. I can't even read music. So I had to go in and draw with a mouse every single like volume change. And then basically you can, the parameters are just insane. Like you change how hard the player is playing the instrument, you know, because obviously if you're playing a violin quietly, it sounds like one thing. And if you're really forcefully dragging the bow, it sounds like something else. And so every single instrument and every single track demanded these sort of like micro adjustments. And it just, you know, especially kind of being new to it, you end up kind of just like killing your ears because you've listened to this same fade in or fade out like 30 times. And you're trying to humanize the instruments, which is sort of the opposite. Like when you're making an extreme metal record, everything's in Pro Tools and you're playing to a click. And if the drummer misses one kick drum, you can literally just grab a kick drum and be like, boop, pop it in. Yeah. And so you're trying to make a human performance sound perfect. Whereas when you're telling the computer, if you tell the computer to play a quarter note at 110 beats per minute, it plays exactly that. Nothing over, nothing under. And it sounds, even with lifelike, you know, tones, it sounds robotic. So it's really, I'm getting faster and faster, obviously, as I continue working in this medium, but it really was a kind of agonizing process of analyzing things in a way that I hadn't done before.
Which program did you use to do all this?
Any digital audio workstation or DAW will have the capabilities. I use Studio One. It's really more about the sort of instrument set that you're using, because I mean, even though I'm using kind of, to be honest, they're like maybe I would say like mid-range like instruments, you know, it's still like it's a pretty considerable investment. I think my wife will never listen to this, so it's fine. I probably spent like, you know, upwards of $900 on various instrument sets and stuff. And, you know, to get into, you know, a lot of what you hear on like TV and stuff is 50% to more of just virtual instruments, because it's faster, it's cheaper. You can crank out 23 episodes of fucking Stingers, like with, and just pay a guy. And then for the main theme, and then maybe a couple other parts, you're like, cool, we'll hire an orchestra for that. And then we'll hire X players to do X parts. And then, but those, you know, those virtual instruments can get really expensive. It was really fun a lot of the time, and it was really agonizing a lot of the time. And I kind of learned, you know, because mixing would become the hardest thing. Like, how do you, you got all these instruments doing all these different things. And I sort of, the way that worked for me is I would do a section at a time. Like, if I could get all the brass instruments, like the French horn and the tuba and the trombone and the trumpet, if they all sounded where they're supposed to be, like with each other, then that was cool. Then I could do all the strings and then all the winds and all the percussion. And then you're only kind of putting four pieces of puzzle together instead of like 30. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
Makes sense.
So it was, it was a very steep learning curve.
That's awesome, man. And then also, like, I know you mentioned the movies were like a good inspiration for writing a lot of this. Were there any comic inspiration? Like, did you turn to any of the comic book issues of Superman? And if you did, which ones?
I think, you know, my favorite Superman comics that kind of always have stuck with me is, I love the All-Star Superman that Grant Morrison did. The plot was so, it was one of those plots that was so obvious once you read it. You're like, of course, duh. But as you're reading it, you're like, this is fucking brilliant. Like, okay, Lex Luthor steals Superman's powers. And at the end, when he finally gets all of Superman's powers, he realizes that being good is what he should do. And then he loses the powers. And it's just like a really wonderful, hopeful storyline. And I love the John Byrne Man of Steel, the reboot from when I was a kid. That was kind of the first time that I really was interested in a Superman comic. I was a Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, X-Men guy. And then when they did like Batman Year One and Man of Steel, and then George Perez did Wonder Woman, all of a sudden I was like, oh, I'm interested in these characters again, you know, which I was more like when I was a little kid. But yeah, I mean, those storylines, and then the wrap up right before Man of Steel that Alan Moore did in Action and Adventures of Superman, the last Superman story when Superman retires and, you know, they have the big fight at the Fortress of Solitude and Brainiac's on Lex Luthor's head and stuff. I thought that was really cool.
Now, I'm really proud to say that we knew you back when, before you become this big composer in the film world.
You knew me when I was just a poser. Now I'm a composer.
That's right. So, speaking of outside of composing, let's talk about the upcoming tour you have with Exhumed. How did you know the time was right for a tour, and how did this tour come about? Because it's a phenomenal fucking lineup. I mean, you have Bewitcher, Enforced, and Creeping Death, all killer bands right now.
You know, I maintained contact with our booking agent throughout the pandemic, and, you know, we just sort of check in with each other. I was just like, how are you doing, man? Like, how are you living? Like, your whole industry is like, everyone's out of work and this and that. And, you know, obviously he knows everybody, so I'm always taking his temperature as to sort of how people are feeling about things. And, you know, this spring when things were kind of turning around, we were like, okay, this is the time to do this, because if we don't do it now, there's going to be so many tours going, and it's just, you know, you end up getting lost in a shuffle. And, you know, funnily enough, as we were discussing the routing and stuff for the tour, he literally was like, well, you know, this might be kind of weird, but he's like, I'm not really going to book you guys in the Southeast because I think there's going to be a lower rate of vaccination and more prolonged COVID infections there. And I was like, I mean, it's probably fine. He's like, nah, I think it's a good idea. And I was like, oh, okay. So that turned out to be a pretty shrewd assessment on his part. And
are you saying people in Florida are stupid?
I have a lot of friends in Florida and I spend a lot of time in Florida. It's just, it's a different culture, you know?
Yeah, it is.
And in this, at this point, you know, it's a culture that's leading to prolonged COVID infections, which is a problem for a.
We're in Texas. You don't have to tell us.
I know.
It's bad here.
I didn't want to get into Texas, but yeah.
I do see you are playing some Texas shows. Like you're playing like Odessa, El Paso, Austin, Dallas, San Antonio, but no Houston. What's up with that?
It's really weird because generally we've done really, really well in Houston, except for the last tour.
Oh, really?
I think Guar was playing the same night down the street. And because it was us and Gatecreeper, we were in like a pretty big room and it was like, I wouldn't say it was a terrible show, but it wasn't a good show for Houston for sure. And so I think, you know, I don't know if people were gun shy about giving us the money that we wanted or if it was going to take us too close to where we weren't going to be going. And I don't know, but that was a disappointment to me as well.
I'm sorry for everybody in Houston.
I am too. I love Houston. I got a lot of friends down there.
I might have to make a road trip over to Austin. Maybe that'd be fun.
Right. I mean, we're playing San Antonio. It's not too far from you guys. What, 2 hours?
Austin's probably closer.
Yeah. Austin's a little bit closer. Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, we've all been itching to get back on tour and, you know, obviously we want it to be safe for ourselves and for people to come to the show. I don't want someone to risk their fucking life to like see a death metal show. I mean, I know it's not very death metal that I want people to live, but if they don't live, they can't buy the fucking t-shirts and I need the money.
So. That's right.
It's not that altruistic.
If you buy this, you got to be buried in it.
There you go. You have to sign like a waiver, like a new will when you come into the show.
I mean, so it's a weird time to be going on tour. And obviously we're all sort of like keeping an eye on things day in, day out, because things have been changing and sometimes for worse, but it seems like, you know, I've been watching that Deicide Cataclysm tour and that seems like it's done really well. Mm-hmm. I know people that are on that tour, everybody's been staying healthy. So
there's ways to do it now. The rules have to be followed. I know it's like you said, it's like the un-death metal thing to do, but I mean, everybody's got to stay safe, you know?
Yeah. I mean, luckily, you know, it seems like even with the higher rate of infections, it seems like it's less dangerous, at least to our target demographic, which is people, you know, like 45 to 20, that, you know, obviously if you have asthma and you're not vaccinated, like, don't come to our fucking show. However, you know, if you're 20 to 45 with no pre-existing conditions, like, I would feel badly that, oh, you might have gotten the flu or, you know, flu-like symptoms from coming to our show, but that's not so bad, you know. And that's kind of the risk that we're looking at personally. It's like, well, we're all good, none of us have respiratory issues, we've all stayed in good health, like, you know, chances are, even if one of us was to get sick and we would have to like cancel a bunch of shows, we would just get sick. Like, we're not going to, you know, knock on wood, probably be in the hospital or any of that shit.
Yeah. I went to one show recently. It was about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And there was the last metal show I went to. It was only like 35 people there. It was really sad. It was the Skull, one of their last shows.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. And, like, within a week, he was gone, Eric Wagner. I mean, I'm a huge Trouble fanboy in the Skull. I'm a huge fan. And I got to actually see Eric and Ron Holzer both that night. And, man, it was just it was something you don't expect. You know what I mean? Right. I mean, we're not going to get into all the reasons and all the whys and whatnots here. But, you know, it was a shock. Yeah, because last time we did the show here, I talked about being at that show. It was before he had passed. So, Dan, my condolences to his family, friends, and fans, and everybody out there. I mean, I'm a huge fanboy of Eric Wagner.
It's just really it's just really saddening, you know, and, you know, we want to try to keep that to a minimum, you know, it's like with how long metal has been around in general, there's enough fucking people in bands dying just normally. Let's try to keep it down as much as we can. And, you know, we've all talked about it within the band and, you know, trying to think about how we can be smart. You know, I was like, okay, guys, like, this is not the tour to just like meet some guy and be like, yeah, dude, let's go score some drugs and like party at this dude's house. It's like, this is not the tour to do that. This is the tour to be like, hey, next time, man, that'd be really fun.
Yeah.
Like, we all got to stay well because, you know.
And I guess one more real quick. This is turning into be like a morbid thing, but if you know the band Imprecation, they're from Houston.
The
drummer Ruben Elizondo passed away from COVID last week.
Right.
Sucks, man.
It's fucking brutal.
Get vaccinated out there is all I got to fucking say, please.
I mean,
if you can.
Like I've said it and I kind of have stopped saying it because I feel like if you haven't by now, like, I'm probably not going to convince you, but you know, I hope that people will. That's all I can say. You know,
because
Joe Rogan got it, right?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, Joe Rogan has it, and he's really touting the ivermectin.
Yeah, he's taking the horse dewormer. I mean,
are you serious? He is.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan's an idiot, and always has been an idiot. And
wasn't he anti-vaccine
diarrhea too? From taking that old
horse? He's not vaccinated.
No,
not vaccinated.
Well, there you go, people.
I mean, you know, I loved him in news radio. And
yep. I loved him in news radio, but after that, MMA, man, I don't know what happened.
I just feel like, you know, if the Center for Disease Control is saying one thing and the guy from news radio is saying the other.
And it's not Dave Foley. Listen to Dave Foley.
Don't listen to Andy Dick, though.
Right.
Well, if you don't know that, there's no helping.
If you don't know that, that's probably just natural selection if you get sick of that. It's all right. But yeah, it's a weird time, man. Like, but we're all cautiously optimistic about the tour, and you know, we really hope that everybody who is not sick and wants to come, you know, come to the fucking show. If you got a sneeze or a cough or a fever, like, please don't come.
Yeah.
Otherwise, please come. Like,
don't you feel weird now? It's like if you're out in public and you know, like, just a regular sneeze happens, you're like, oh, fuck, everybody's going to look at me. Daggers.
It's funny you say that because at my work, there's a sandblasting machine that I use a lot. Like, today I was on it for like 6 hours, so I get a lot of dust in my face.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there like sneezing and coughing at the grocery store. And we just went back to masks indoors here. So I had a mask on.
Yeah.
But I just feel like looking around like, it's cool, dude. I just work with a sandblasting machine. I inhale a lot of dust. It's all good. Like, swear.
It's like, yeah, I can't say anything about that. Wow. So one of the things I want to talk to you about, I know you're a big nerd like us, you're a big geek. So when you're going on tour, do you ever go out to try to find cool stores that you've never been to find like that piece for your collection, that type of stuff?
Yes. And one of the best things about Ross Sewage rejoining Exhumed is that's how he and I knew each other before music, really.
Wow.
We used to play the TSR Marvel Superheroes role-playing game, the tabletop role-playing game in the early 90s. That's what we do every Saturday night. Ladies loved us back then. But anyway, and so now that there's two people in the band that are like, oh, there's this toy store. Oh, there's this comic store. It's a lot harder to sort of ignore it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now that I have an ally, and also our merch person is of a horror nerd, comics nerd. She's done a lot of like lettering for Archie, and she's also like a horror author. And so now that it's like we're slowly building a coalition of like, this is what we do now for fun. Like, we're gonna go buy toys, we're gonna go buy comics. Like, this is what we do if we're in town hours early. And it's a lot of fun. I got in 2019 on our last tour, I got a carded Secret Wars Kang. I got a carded Secret Wars Dr. Octopus.
Nice.
I got a Superpowers Mantis and just a bunch of random comics and stuff, you know, here and there. So Yeah, I mean, that's it's a good way to sort of spend your day. I mean, it's if I'm not blowing $40 on that, I'm going to blow it on food or something, you know.
Yeah. Next time you're in Houston, man, we'll drive around to some shops.
Hell, so yeah.
Who's the tour your merch person you're talking about?
Her name's Rachel Deering.
Okay.
I know Rachel.
Yeah. She's great. She's fantastic. Yeah. I don't really know. I'm like, you're like an author. Like, why do you want to ride around in the van selling shirts for exam? But that's
that's cool.
She's like all about it. So I'm like, hey, she's one of my best friends. So I'm like, I'm not going to talk you out of it. Like, come on board.
That's amazing.
So yeah, it's the van keeps getting nerdier and nerdier every year. It's great.
So before we move on to some geeky topics, have you got into the mindset to write any new music for Exhumed or Gruesome? Or I know Pounder you put a brand new album out back in January.
Right. Pounder did a record in January. Funnily enough, we're actually trying to finish our third album before the tour starts because. No. When the band first started, we wrote so many songs that we're still dealing with songs that some of them are like from like between the first and second album and stuff. And then some of them are newer as well. Exhumed, we just finished a record. We're working on the artwork and stuff right now. And so that will be out probably next summer, spring-ish. And then Gruesome, we're in the middle of writing. This is sort of, we're a death tribute band for anybody that doesn't know, but we write our own music. And this time the record is kind of in the vein of Human. So it's kind of, it's a little bit more demanding. So we're working slowly, but we are working.
One of my favorite albums by them.
It's a good one, but it's a tough one to sort of
very technical
hang with. Yeah. So we really want to do it right. And our drummer was close friends with Sean Reiner. I mean, I was friends with him, but Gus was like really tight with him. And Sean's obviously no longer with us, so we really want to do right by him,
And Gus has been breaking out recently with his band.
Right.
I've been watching in the videos, man. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, we've all had a lot of time.
he's singing, he does like a bunch of 80s songs, but in a super metal way. It's really cool.
Yeah. It's kind of like Typo Negative was like an 80s pop cover band.
Yep.
Perfect
description.
Yeah. Cool. So if you're into it, he does a great job. And, he's always been like an okay guitar player, but over the last, since the pandemic, he's really focused on playing guitar and singing. And it's like, you're supposed to just be a drummer, dude. Come on. Drummers are supposed to be shitty at this stuff. Like, come on.
Wow. So, all right, let's talk about some geeky stuff real quick.
Yeah.
I know you have to leave soon because you're going to go see Chang-Chi tonight.
Yes.
I plan to hopefully see it this weekend in our schedule if it works out. I'm excited for it. It's supposed to be a good Marvel movie.
I've heard good things.
Yeah.
I think most of them are pretty good. There's only really a couple that I'm like, eh.
Oh, okay.
I don't even know that I hate those
couple.
But there's definitely some are really good and some are just like, oh, these are good. And then some are like,
yeah.
I think it's going to be very different. And
yes.
I'm hoping it's going to be really unmoored from the sort of post Endgame MCU, because that was my beef with the Spider-Man movies is I was like, I love Spider-Man and I love the fact that he's there with these characters, but especially the second movie, I was like, is this fucking Iron Lad or is this Spider-Man? what the fuck, man? So
the nanomites, nano machine shit ruined everything for Marvel for me. It ruined the Iron Man suit and it ruined the Spider-Man suit.
And why does everybody just have to take their mask off at a random moment? There's like that scene in Endgame. And Endgame is probably one of my favorite movies of all time. Like, because just reading comics for,
four years,
it was the greatest gift I could ever receive from Hollywood. But there's that scene where they all show up and they're like, okay, we're going to fight. And everyone's like, let's all take off our masks for just a second before we go into this giant battle. And I was like, why would you do that?
It's in their contract. They have to show their face.
That kind of drives me
nuts. And then they're like, well, Peter Parker is Spider-Man. Well, you took your mask off all the fucking time, man.
Yeah. Obviously I've seen the trailer for the new one and
yep.
I see how the end was a setup for this one, but I don't know. I hope that they I hope that they get that part out in like 15 minutes and then just get into a fucking Spider-Man movie that's about saving just the city and fighting, you know.
It's supposed to somehow tie into the multiverse movie, the Doctor Strange multiverse.
Yeah.
Don't, I mean, I know what happens in the trailer, so I'm sure that's where it all gets fucked up. And then probably the same time that happens, Wanda's doing something. It's just like a double whammy.
Right.
I think it's supposed to be in Shang-Chi as well.
Really?
Yeah.
No. Well, I will.
I know there's some surprises in it, so.
Tomorrow morning.
He'll find out before us.
That's right.
Yeah, I try to see all the movies, you know, on opening day just because that way I can talk about them with other with people that have also seen them. And I can just go on the internet and not worry about, you know, getting plot points ruined. I mean, I would see him regardless, but it's just, I mean, we were on tour in Germany when Infinity War came out, and my very resourceful wife was like, okay, you guys are in Hamburg that day. Like, I found a theater that's in English, that's showing the movie in English with German subtitles. Do you want to go there? And I was like, yes. She's like, cool. Well, I got you and Ross tickets. You guys got to figure out your own way to get there, but like, have fun. Like, you know, she got the early show so we wouldn't miss sound check and stuff. And like when Endgame came out, we were in Phoenix. We did the sound check and we're like, all right, cool. We got an Uber. See y'all later. Like, bye.
Priorities, man. Priorities.
Yeah.
I mean, for the Infinity War movies, definitely. Like, Shang-Chi's a little bit different.
I mean, I just, you know, I feel like I'm home. Like, I don't have anything else going on, whatever.
Yeah, there's no reason not to.
Yeah.
Did you venture out to see Black Widow in the theater?
I did. I saw it in Florida when I was out there with Gruesome last month. I did not see it on opening day. I had to wait until Sunday, which was very frustrating. we were playing gigs on Friday and Saturday, and I forgot that you could see it on Thursday, and I totally could have seen it on Thursday, but by the time – I also live in a small town, so like you can just be like, I'm going to the movies tonight, and be like, I got tickets. I was in Miami, and I was like, fuck, I can go see it right now. And I was like, oh, there's no tickets left for the last show because it's in 20 minutes, and I totally fucked up. And I liked Black Widow a lot. I thought it was really good, actually.
I enjoyed it, too.
Yeah.
George is not going to say anything here.
No, you didn't care for it, George?
No, not really.
The man that didn't like anything?
I had mixed opinions about it. I liked the movie overall. I just wish they hadn't completely changed Taskmaster as much as they did. And I know that, like,
Ross said.
Yeah, he's not a lot of people's favorite character, but he's like a top three Marvel character for me. So it was kind of disappointing.
When I watched that movie the first time, Justin, when that big thing happened with Taskmaster, I'm like, oh, fucking Justin's going to hate that. I knew it. I knew it right there.
It was a complete reimagining of the character.
It was. And I mean, at least they called her Antonia. So, I mean, it kind of worked with like Tony Masters and, you know, the fight scenes were all perfect. They were all really well done. Really good examples of a Taskmaster should fight. I wish they hadn't changed the character so much.
Yeah.
But it is what it is.
They kind of like, it's really
weird. I can just hide George now.
That they try to do these like, these sort of big character things with Black Widow, then it's always like, she can't have kids. Oh my God. Like in Age of Ultron, she's like, I'm a monster. I was like, why? She's like, well, I can't have kids. I was like, I mean, I could see that making you sad. I don't think that makes you a monster.
No. You're still
like a totally hot super spy that like can like hang with Thor in a battle. That's pretty good. Like, I don't think you're a monster. And then it's like, I accidentally murdered a kid. And I was like, I mean, that's not great, but I mean, you were like a fucking trained assassin who was like brainwashed. Like, I think, you know, I can let you off the hook a little bit with that, you know? I think that they just, those kind of character points felt, they just feel forced, you know? Whereas the family stuff actually came off in Black Widow a lot better than I thought. I saw the trailers and I was like, and then in the movie, I was like, this actually kind of works.
Yeah,
I really like Florence Pugh as a choice as her successor. I think she's going to do a great job going forward with all the rest of the Marvel stuff.
Florence Pugh is amazing. She really is.
I love her. So, yeah, she's great.
So you have to assume that Contessa Valentina de Fontaine, whatever, she's putting together the Thunder.
You remembered more than I did.
Well, I remember from the old Jim Steranko, Rage of the Shield,
with
the beehive. You have to assume she's putting together the Thunderbolts, right?
That's what I was expecting.
Okay, all right, cool. Just making sure
we're on the same page on that one.
It'll be interesting to see what iteration of the team though we get.
I mean, she has Taskmaster now, right? She has U.S. Agent now. Right.
She doesn't have Taskmaster. Taskmaster went off on her own.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, Taskmaster just sort of was sort of inconclusive at the end.
Like, she went all kung fu like at the end.
All the sisters came and rescued her, or whatever. All the assassins.
Right.
She's in the wind. Right. She's in the wind.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, there's still room for Marvel to retcon that. I mean, it could have just been that the real Taskmaster existed and trained that girl or what. I mean, there's still possibilities.
If the
Taskmaster fan base complains loudly enough on Twitter, maybe they'll, you know. Somehow.
Maybe. You never know.
It's going to be Justin and like one other person.
I don't complain. Like, honestly, it was fine. I just, you know, I wish it was a little different.
I did like the ending of it, how they set it up for one of the next Disney Plus series. Yes. I thought that was interesting. I was like, how they're sort of mixing those two together more now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I kept hoping for that with the Netflix series, you know, like even just a shot of like whatever, there's like whatever disaster happening in New York. It's like, oh, maybe you could just literally see like Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, like pulling some people to safety from a bus
on a TV screen somewhere. Yeah.
Or Iron Man flies by and is like, did that dude just lift a bus? Like, I don't have time to worry about it right now. I'm fighting whatever. I thought that could have been really cool, but I don't know. We'll see. I guess Charlie Cox is supposed to be in Spider-Man 3. Who knows?
Supposedly.
So he says he's not, but whatever. Same thing with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, the first season was a little bit more of in line with what was going on in MCU, but after that, it just sort of went way off.
It went totally off.
It was a good show, though, but it was just weird.
Yeah, it was fun. I found myself like, the longer I kept watching it, the more I was like, I don't even think I really like this. And I was like, well, I did just watch like 5 episodes in a row. So I kind of like it, but
you're just committed at that point. You just got to see it through.
Right. It's not like, you know, there have been some things like Iron Fist season 1. That was a slog. That was tough to get through. I mean, I did it.
Yeah.
Like the weekend I did it.
I don't know if I watched season 2 or not on that one. They did it season 2, right?
Yeah.
Season 2 was fine. We talked about it already. It was passable.
It was much, much, much better, and it was leading to a place that could have actually been really fun.
If they had gotten around to doing the Power Man and Iron Fist show together, it would have been awesome, I think. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't happen.
I mean,
I just wanted more Heroes for Hire stuff.
Right. Yeah. And it's just such a great setup. You've got this sort of like Zen Buddhist fish out of water guy with a streetwise dude, and they're each sort of seeing the world in different ways and informing each other's viewpoint. And then you had Misty Knight and Colleen Wing, who were the best parts, certainly the best parts of the Iron Fist show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever they were like together, I was like, this is a dynamite show.
I mean, they could have kept going. We could have seen the Daughters of the Dragon spinoff. We could have seen all kinds of cool shit, but they canceled it all. So,
yeah, it's bittersweet. I mean, like, I just don't know how they're going to, who knows if they're going to bring them into the bigger, more interwoven universe, you know?
They have the opportunity since Shang-Chi is like a thing now, and they're bringing the martial arts side of Marvel to the big screen. There's a lot of opportunity to bring in the other martial arts important characters. So I don't know.
I think the thing that I kept thinking though when I was watching all those shows, even Daredevil and The Punisher, is that would have solved the sort of is it canon, whatever problem is that all these characters really make much more sense in the 70s. And also New York was a very crime ridden city in the 70s, and it's not now. And I just think that they could have set all those shows in the 70s and then thus avoided the problem completely. Like, hey, there's always been superheroes, but they've been under the radar. Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. You know? The 70s MCU.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like they're doing Fantastic Four. And to me, the Fantastic Four doesn't make sense unless it's in the 60s. The whole setup doesn't make sense. And they can really, I mean, who knows what they're going to do.
But we're going to get more Dr. Doom finger guns.
God, please, no.
I with Fantastic Four, I'm hoping, like you said, I'm hoping it's actually older characters. And they've been around for a long time. They're one of the original
superhero teams. Yeah, sort of an established story would be good instead of just trying to do another origin story, because we've seen that origin. It's like, same thing as Spider-Man. Like, I hope to God they never do another Spider-Man origin, because we've seen 3. There's no reason.
Right. Well, I think with the Fantastic Four, I mean, again, I'm not on anybody's payroll. But if I was, if they came to me and said, what do we do for the Fantastic Four movie? I'd say,
Franklin Richards.
No, it starts in the 60s and they're exploring the negative zone. They get sucked into the negative zone. They get powers. They escape. Then the negative zone starts encroaching on New York. They go back in the negative zone. They fight Annihilus. They fight Blastar. They finally win. They return home and whoops, now it's present day. And then you've got a great comedy setup because the Thing walking around like, what a revolting development. You know? And it's like, what? And then the early FF, I'm a really big FF fan, and Stan's writing is so brutally sexist. And Sue kind of ended up becoming the most powerful member of the team. And that would be a great thing to play off. Oh, Reed, darling, blah, blah, blah. And, everybody would be like, what the fuck? This bitch could, like, put him in a bubble and, like, kill him in, like, a minute. You know? Like, what? And so you could have these kind of, like, good fish out of water comedy moments that, you know, kind of propel the movies forward and help audiences choke down the idea that a guy that can stretch is somehow exciting.
It's like Captain America, you know, being... You know,
language.
50 years. Yes. Exactly. That fish out of water whole scenario.
Because then you can stay true to the original concept of the character and you can acknowledge that, yeah, this is like kind of dorky.
I really like that idea. Let's do it. Let's tell them.
Obviously, Victor Von Doom helped them back in the 60s with the research, and he's been laying low in Latveria doing his own magic bullshit science stuff, and he sees that they've returned. And he's like, wait a second. And then there's your post-credit scene. And then
let me call Feige for you and I'll get you a score too.
that would be a movie that I would want to see that would take the core concept and put it in a way that would be fun. But I mean, usually they come up with good shit. I mean, I didn't give a fuck about Guardians of the Galaxy, and those movies ended up being great. So
that's just James Gunn doing what James Gunn does.
Right. I mean,
yes.
I always think like Guardians of the Galaxy is like, if Exhumed was a Marvel movie, like that would be us. Because like Star-Lord, he's like one sandwich away from fat. It's like me. And he kind of doesn't really have much going for him, but yet somehow he's the leader. And then Mike, our drummer, is very Drax the Destroyer. He's like same build, also bald. Also, like, a lot of jokes go, like, right over his head.
Oh, no.
He's very tough, and then Ross is like our racket raccoon. He's always taking the piss out of everybody and saying why this is a terrible idea and why we're all idiots. And then Sebastian's our Groot, because all he thinks about is rock music. That's it. You could be like, how's the weather? He's like, yeah, this Thin Lizzy solo, man. I've been listening to it. It's really good. So, anyway, that's my... Guardians of the Galaxy, man.
There's your Exhumed Guardians of the Galaxy comparison we've always wanted. So let's talk about What If. I know Justin hasn't seen it yet, but I've seen all four episodes. And I know you, Matt, were a fan of the series growing up, as was I. I loved Absolutely. What If. It was, and when they announced it, I'm like, they're really going to do that? And it surprisingly, it's held up. And it supposedly... It's canon, whatever they do in that show.
Right.
So let me get your opinions on the first four episodes so far. Which one is your favorite?
I think every episode has kind of been getting progressively more interesting, because the first one, I felt the concept was kind of underdeveloped. It was just like, here's Captain America, but it's about Peggy. Same story, same outcome, basically.
That was back in the, they did that in the comics too. Like, what if this character got this person's powers instead? That type of thing, you know?
The issue where Jane Foster gets the hammer of Thor is really weird, because she ends up marrying Odin at the end.
Oh, yeah.
She like gives up the hammer to Thor and then like marries his dad. And I was like, this is a little creepy.
Somebody's got daddy issues.
Yeah. Or I think it's just, comics being written by a middle-aged man attracted to a 20-year-old nurse.
That was definitely Marvel back in the day.
Oh, for sure. I mean, Reed Richards, like Sue, was originally one of his students, and he was her college professor. I'm just putting that out there.
Yep.
It was a different time.
Different time. Very Mad Men.
Yeah. But I think the series is really good. And the newest episode, the Doctor Strange episode, without giving away too much, they really went to a place that the movies would never go because it's way too dark. And
it's way dark. Of,
yeah, it reminds it's me good, of though. My favorite issues back in the day. Somehow the Avengers are fighting Galactus or something, and somebody ends up using the ultimate nullifier, and it not only destroys Galactus, but it destroys all of reality. And then the last panel is just the Watcher floating in nothingness, like, whoops, don't use the ultimate nullifier, guys. That was the end. I was like, this is dark. So yeah. I think they're embracing that. And, you know, I think it's a good, it's the best animated series they've ever done because DC has always had the good animated series.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And finally, Marvel has something that could be mentioned in the same breath as Young Justice or, you know, Batman the Animated Series or Justice League Unlimited, which are some of my favorite cartoons.
And they went with it in a smart way where they were using the MCU, but doing it as what if, it let them not really make everything canonized, and we can pull elements from here and there, and but yep. It's nothing, it doesn't affect the movies that much, but we're using the same characters and some of the same voiceover actors and stuff like that.
I'm very impressed that they've gotten all that voice talent. I mean, they got Jeremy Renner as himself and so on and so forth, you know, Phil Coulson as himself. And it's pretty impressive. Obviously not Scarlett Johansson.
No, not anymore. I like the Avengers one. Maybe the second episode where, not to spoil anything, but a lot of the Avengers are taken out.
Yes, it's like what if the Avengers had never been, which was
yep.
What if number 3 of the original series, I want to say. And it's really
cool.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the I know there's going to be a Marvel Zombies because they've teased it. I'm waiting for that episode.
I mean, I'm going to watch.
I think it's the 8th episode that comes out.
Is it really?
Okay. Yeah, I think so.
Nice. Well, I should leave it there because I got a movie to catch.
That's right. You got to go see Chang Chi.
I do. I got to see, you know, I got to see what they're doing. It's pretty out there. So
once you're done this weekend, we'll talk about it in the Metal Geek Society Facebook group.
Absolutely.
Plug there. Well, thanks for hanging on there, man, and talking with all of us geeks.
Absolute pleasure, man.
So before I let you go, let everybody know where they can find more information about your new album. Sure. Where is it going to be a physical release? Are you working at that?
I am doing a limited run of Digipak CDs that you can order on my Bandcamp page, which is Matt Harvey Must Be Destroyed.bandcamp.com or whatever. You can get them on the US web store for Exhumed and Gruesome and Pounder, which is darkercorners.bigcartel.com or whatever. And then I have my own website, which is just Matt Harvey Must Be Destroyed.com, has links to all of that. And, yeah, please, you know, buy lots of stuff.
And your social media handles are I know some of them are Matt Harvey Must Be Destroyed.
That's it. That Facebook, Instagram, and that's really all I do. I don't have like a TikTok or anything. I'm too old for that.
We're all too old for that.
I feel like Reed Richards hitting on his, you know, college students being on TikTok. It'd be weird.
I feel like when I had to do some research for work at one point, I'm like, what do I do here? What is going on?
You kids into these days? Damn video games. Yeah, I don't know.
So real quick, you can find us at MetalGeeks.net for all your Metal Geeks needs, as well as our sister show, MSRcast, Metal Geeks, on all the socials at Metal Geeks. We are part of the ESO Network, ESOnetwork.com. And where can people find out about you, Mr. George?
You can find me on all the social medias at George Tripsis.
And Justin?
You find me pretty much anywhere as at ComicalJC.
So again, check out the album. It's called Last Son of Krypton. It's streaming on services. Buy it from his Bandcamp page. We'll put links to all that stuff in our show notes on our website. Check out Exhumed on Tour in October and November, and look forward to new music, man.
Fuck yeah. Thanks, guys.
We'll talk about Shang-Chi soon.
Hell yeah. All right. Right on.
You guys have all been right, man. One last thing we have to say is keep it metal.
Keep it
geeky. And keep it geeky. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
All right, guys.
Later, man.
Hey, Geekazoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.
Welcome to Dr. Geek's Laboratory.
Dr. Geek here with another reminder that the ESO Network is pro-science and pro-vaccine. We urge you to be a superhero and protect yourself, your family, and your fellow geeks around the world. Don't be fooled by the forces of evil and their anti-science misinformation campaign. Consult the latest CDC guidelines, your doctor, and get the COVID vaccine today.
Tired of the same old movie podcasts?
Yeah.
What if I told you there's a podcast that gabs about good and bad movies?
Why are you spreading such lies?
It's true, you rascal. Every week, Double Edge Double Bill mixes that scrumptious taste of good movies with the sour flavor of a bad one.
That sounds tasty.
Well, don't delay. Stuff it down your ear throats today. Double Edge Double Bill is part of the Balanced ESO Network Breakfast. Can be found wherever you download podcasts.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.